I'm Floyd J. Winters, and next to me is Augie. Good morning, Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay, and good morning, Floyd. And we are in the throes of the beginnings of the 2016. Mike, are we going backwards? Or the compassionate conservative is back again. First it was G. Wiz, and now it's J.E.B., John Ellis Bush. And all beware of the Romney, who says we need something new, something younger, something fresh. And by golly, the word is he's supporting Rubio. That's who he had in mind. The guy who said he was evacuating Cuba under threat of Castro when in fact he was born in the U.S. Other facts of life will be changed as we go down the pipe, I'm sure. In any event, the governor of Florida is the other curious little bugger, according to some of his own people. According to the governor's fact sheet, Mr. Scott's former press aide met with Florida law enforcement's communication staff not to target the clerk, but to coordinate a news conference and get a full account of how two prisoners escaped in 2013 using forged papers from the Orange County clerk's office. Mr. Putnam, who's on the cabinet, or in the cabinet, who has said that Mr. Scott misled him about the resignation of Mr. Bailey, said Thursday he had great concern about the Orange County clerk of court's accusation and asked that it somehow be addressed. I'm open to ideas about how we do that, he told the governor and his fellow cabinet members. And this goes to the business of what did Mr. Scott know and when did he know it, facing a lawsuit, an ethics complaint, and repeated demands for an investigation into the ouster of top law enforcement official Governor Rick Scott admitted on Thursday that he could have handled the resignation better but called accusations of impropriety ridiculous, untrue. Well, we know how things are ridiculous and untrue from a man who took the Fifth Amendment 75 times, don't we, Floyd? This man is our governor, and he scraped by in the last election against a former Republican who became a Democrat, and Charlie Crist. And now we have Alex Sink, a Democrat and former cabinet member who lost the 2010 race against Mr. Scott, the first race he ran, and said he had run roughshod over the cabinet by ousting Mr. Bailey. That's the head of the FDLE, Florida Department of Legal Enforcement, without its knowledge, and that it is up to them to hold him accountable. She criticized the cabinet for failing to follow up with Mr. Bailey to find out why he resigned. I want the cabinet to stand up and have a spine and a backbone. I guess they're one and the same, or maybe they have two. And take responsibility, said Ms. Sink. Anyway, she attended this meeting, and the important thing is to put the governor on notice that he's not a be-all, end-all. And there's a gal by the name of Morganson down in Venice, Sarasota, who is calling for this this investigation and suing the state and Mr. Scott in particular for his questionable behavior, to put it mildly. At the same time, and I won't go into the depth on this, there's a game of chicken going on in Europe with respect to Greece. Is Greece going to pull out of the euro? If it does, it will send a signal to investors all over the world as to the future of the euro, and the flood to the dollar will be absolutely enormous. But coming back to the thing I mentioned earlier, where are we with Jeb Bush, John Ellis Bush, Floyd? What do you think of that?
Well, he has a good chance of being a major candidate for the 2016 cycle. Again, obviously name recognition, just like Hillary has. He didn't have nearly the reputation of Mr. Scott. A lot of people are not very happy with Scott. He nearly won the election. Jeb Bush, although he lost the election his first time around, did pretty handily the second time and left as kind of a popular president. He was a lot more, let's say, educated, a lot more aware of what was happening than his brother.
Oh, than his brother.
And his brother.
I refer to his brother as G. Wiz. And he had always wondered what was happening as the words went by, Wiz,
but,
Wiz.
But Jeb was more intellectual of the two, a little bit more moderate.
He also speaks Spanish.
And, he's married to a Hispanic woman. He's been to Cuba.
Who has tried to sneak products into this country illegally, but they let that slide.
Well, I don't think that was a big deal, what happened there with in the airplane.
What was that about, anyway?
I think it was just some, what could have been
clothing,
just called some personal items.
Personal clothing.
Yeah. I think that what she did wasn't something that was very remarkable at all. But Jeb, I think, has potential. He's more respected.
But you say, keep saying had. Because,
no, has more potential.
Okay. I miss
and without doubt is more of an intellect than his brother. Did much better in school. Doesn't have quite the questionable background than George W. did.
Well, you do know there was word at one time that Southern Airways, which flew out of Miami, was the airways that went into Arkansas and then on down to Costa Rica, and was part of the Iran-Contra shipping of drugs for the weaponry. And it would have been a time when his father had given a wave to everybody goodbye and a pardon at the same time. Poindexter and Weinberger and Ollie North, all those people were not going to be investigated for their role in Iran-Contra. And Jeb was on the periphery of that, but he did act as an organizer, a planner, so to speak, in that situation that was pretty deadly for this country and for the Western Hemisphere.
The Iran-Contra affair was kind of an interesting thing. Ollie North was just on Greta Sustern last night on her coverage of ISIS. He's still regarded as a bit of a hero, the guy who illegally helped to smuggle arms to Iran. Smuggled arms to Iran is regarded as a hero. He was invited by a local...
I wonder where the drugs came from, how they got, which drugs they smuggled to get the arms.
He was invited by almost a local hero by a local organization here in Manatee County.
What organization was that?
One of our school systems. It was a parochial school system.
Oh, the Catholic schools did
that. Yeah, and
wow.
I didn't want to mention
them
in particular.
You know, Ollie North.
Not the schools, just a school.
There's
multiple schools here. But I kind of... The guy was a convicted felon who was involved in shipping arms to Iran in exchange for drugs to help the Contras against the congressional approval in the United States. And it's just amazing.
He was granted immunity.
That he has been elevated to the status of a hero.
Yeah, he's. We had him on the show actually about 3-4 months ago, mm-hmm. And he. I brought up Iran and the situation there. I brought up 1953 with Mossadegh, and do you realize the 1980 uprising by the Iranians against us was a reaction and a payback for what we did to their country in 1953. If you have any thoughts on any of these subjects that we're going to continue on in, 941-745-1490, please call and tell us what you agree or disagree with. I'm sure some of you people out there are not playing tennis, and so you can maybe listen to what we're saying. But in any event, keep going, Lloyd, with where your thought process was.
So you're saying there's a connection between Ollie North and Jeb Bush? I'm not aware of that particular connection.
Well, Southern Airways was being run, and the word was that the drugs and the arms were coming out of that airline. So I would just suggest that I would submit that it's more than likely that Ollie was aware of that, his relationship to the Bush family being what it was. And, of course, the blame for all of that mess ultimately fell to Jimmy Carter. Well, what a terrible administration, what this, what that, what the other thing. And yet it was under Jimmy Carter's office as president, he left us with a debt-free nation, debt-free. Total debt, even to ourselves. I mean, and the debt we have now is 65% to 70% of our own making for ourselves, not for other countries. I think of the $18 trillion that they claim and yell about, it's about a, I think it's a trillion and a half is to China, and then it's broken up thereafter. But the U.S. pensions, state and federal, and a whole raft of other things are our own dollars turning. For and against ourselves. It's a curious fact. But that's why I always mention on the show what happened in 1945 when we were 120% in debt against gross domestic product. It was after World War II. We invested all that military for 4.5 years, and I wonder what it could possibly be with all the investments of Afghanistan and what's that other country? Oh, Iraq, where the weapons of mass destruction were. I mean, Floyd, I tell you, the continuum is just amazing, wouldn't you say?
Well, it goes on and on and on. Probably for about several thousand years. It's not just the United States that's been involved in that.
Yeah.
It's a common thing. So Jeb Bush is an interesting character. I think he may be one of the more moderate of the Republican field right now. One of the things that
moderate. That's always an interesting term.
What
do you suppose is going to happen if Rubio makes a serious attempt and the Romney money comes in behind him?
And I think Rubio and Jeb have almost different situations. Jeb is a little bit more relaxed on immigration than Rubio is, both with strong Latino backgrounds, Rubio obviously being a Latino nationality and Jeb being married to someone. Jeb speaks Spanish.
Actually, he's not, but that's all right.
He's not?
No, Rubio was born in the United States.
No, I'm saying, but his background is, and his parents immigrated from Cuba.
Right, right. Yeah. He's first generation American.
No, I absolutely. But
I don't know if he would want to admit that on the stage.
Well, he's misspoken on that issue on several occasions, and he's now kind of redeemed himself and has got that behind him. But he was claiming.
Has he really? You think it won't come up in the debates?
No, he's gotten it out. He's kind of cleaned the slate on that particular issue. But it's interesting. They'll have two of those candidates, two Republican candidates, with very strong Hispanic ties. And
Ted Cruz and Rubio, is that who you're referring to?
Cruz, and also Bush as well.
So you got three, really.
So you've got, in that case, if you add Cruz, you've got three candidates. Mm-hmm. And this would be an interesting potential election because you have more of a connection to the Latino vote on the Republican side than you do on the Democratic side. That's an anomaly right there.
Well, the problem with the Hispanic vote in Florida especially is the I-4 corridor. And the I-4 corridor in the 2008, the 08 election, 40,000 votes came out of there for Obama. And most of those people that are in that corridor are coming from, as citizens, Puerto Rico. And there's a real movement away from Puerto Rico into Florida. And in the 2012 election, it was 100,000 votes for Obama. So they really swung Florida almost single-handedly. And that river of population near the villages, if you're familiar with the villages, which is a kind of a transient population of northerners who've located in the vicinity west of Orlando, is becoming rapidly Puerto Rican. Volusia County and so forth are all becoming that, and that's moving rapidly westward and southwestward into, guess where, Manatee County. It's Manatee County, and then guess where, Sarasota County. Oh, my goodness, Floyd, the danger of the dark-skinned people, what they will do to you, and what do they call that, white flight? Where will they fly to? They'll fly to Cuba. And Cuba is opening up diplomatic relations to normalize what we had before Castro came along. And when we normalize all that, and on Friday we had Carlos Mascaros on talking about the Port Manatee situation, which is a subject I was hoping to get into, but I second thought of that a little bit and decided not to go there. But, I think that conversation should happen. And I talked to Johannes Werner, who called in on Friday, and said to him, I said, where do you want to go and when do you want to come on? Well, he's not going to be able to come on until next month in March. But he definitely wants to talk about the future of Cuba. And Johannes is, as was mentioned by Carlos, one of the most foremost authorities on Cuba relations. He's got a radio show twice a month on WSLR. And he talks about Cuba and the future of, and it's an interesting conversation we will have down the pipe.
We'll be having some changes, though. The Cubans are slowly getting accustomed to the idea, to the prospect of that they may normalize relationship. You have a younger generation there. One second.
We have a caller coming in here now, and the future of Cuba and U.S. is going to get interesting, and the growing numbers coming into Florida is increasing.
Okay.
Lawrence,
we'll
let's see. There's been a large increase in the number of Cubans trying to reach the United States by sea. The Coast Guard has reported intercepting some 3,722 in the past year, double the number in 2012. and there has been concerns expressed here that the normalization of relations could bring an end to the policy. So who's our caller, Floyd? Or do we have a name?
Thank you very much for your call.
We don't have a caller.
I was gonna respond. I just asked him a civil question, and our friend Lawrence.
Oh, that was
going to have a debate with me already. Just asked him a simple question.
He really didn't want to go.
I'm not going to take the insults. If he wants to talk to me politely, I'll gladly have a conversation with him.
Yeah.
And
let him show himself as a civilized conservative. Maybe he can set an example for one. So coming back to Cuba, what will happen when we start boating people back and forth, and what will happen to citizenship and all the rest? So we have a caller.
We've got a gentleman who would like to talk about Brian Williams.
Oh, Brian Williams, sure.
Okay.
What's the word on Brian
Williams?
I'm going
to put him on in a second, get the phone up. Okay, Lawrence, tell us about Brian Williams.
Yeah, what's the
you're live on the air.
We're trying to hear your voice here, Lawrence. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, I have the phone up all the way up.
So it's not, there's something else.
Oh,
there.
Okay. There we go.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
We're still having a little trouble. We apologize for that, Lawrence.
That's quite all right.
And Brian Williams is an interesting situation, isn't it?
Yes, that's what I called because you had been talking about Republicans since the get-go and the innuendo of tennis. Adding that up, I thought I would give you a call.
It was a signal to you. It was in the ether.
Yes, it was.
So Brian Williams is truly an interesting situation. You're absolutely right. And what's he going
right.
to do? Right.
Do you defend him being employed by NBC at this point or not?
I think he's in huge trouble, if that's your import. I think he's done something now. And if he hadn't repeated it several times in different ways...
Right. I asked you to be fired.
Well, he's fired himself as far as I can see.
No. Should the corporation of National Broadcasting Corporation fire him?
Yes, I would agree. He should be demoted, fired, whatever they want to do.
Demoted or fired? Oh, go on MSNBC.
Well, that's like a death sentence for someone like Brian Williams anyway, so... But, yeah, if you're wanting some kind of full-throated, angry firing, then we should say the same thing about our governor for lying about Mr. Bailey and the FDLE.
Or Dan Rather, for that matter. I was just trying to do an industry observation as opposed to going on to another subject.
Lawrence, let me partially agree with you, okay? In the industry, when they started replacing 50 people at a time for increasing the salaries of Diane Sawyer, Dan Rather, a whole raft of people, all of the networks were doing that as a cost measure and going from information to infotainment and then having these people see themselves as something bigger than they were. At least in the case of Dan Rather, he stood up to the thugs in Chicago at the Chicago Convention, was knocked down for standing up and asking hard questions. In a day when he was younger and more bold, he got careless in the time of George Jeb G. Wiz, who was basically should have been in jail for insider trading for Harkin Oil. But he did the noble thing as a youth, and he got reckless in his older years, and he did a stupid thing, and reporting something that he had not researched, which is somewhat in the vein of Brian Williams here, who, if I were the boss, perhaps I would openly hand him his papers. But he's going to have a hard time staying where he's at and going anywhere else as well.
For those of you listening, Brian Williams is a reporter, well-known, respected reporter. And he still is technically, but he took some flack.
Technically, he's respected.
Lawrence, let me finish, please. For the audience listening, and so Brian... exaggerated or perhaps just lied about his involvement.
No, it's a lie. He lied. There's no doubt he lied.
Just let me finish my statement to clarify the audience. I'm just giving some civil conversation here. So what Brian Williams did is he made apparently what seemed like it was a lie about his involvement in being fired at while in the helicopter while reporting in Iraq. And he was taken to task for that. He stepped down voluntarily. So just want to let the listening audience know what the conversation is. Lawrence, your comment?
What is his job and responsibility to his industry? Do you not think that the man lied, Pinocchio, on purpose lied dozens of times represents an industry that's supposed to be reporting the truth? And he...
Yeah, that is true, what you're saying, and it's also true of another cable network. It's called frequently oxymoronic xenophobia, or Fox, and they lie as well, and they've been forced...
Wait a second, so that's okay? What, you're changing the subject?
No, I'm not.
Brian
I
Williams
know what you're saying.
Lied,
it is the same
and he's not respected
Lawrence,
for it, except
stop,
for you
Lawrence,
two, who still do.
Shut the sign. We're just going to shut
We're
the
not
sign.
Arguing with you, Lawrence. We agree.
We're actually
we
showing
agree with you.
What you said, which is the system is happening in all of the networks. It doesn't justify any one of them, and it certainly doesn't justify Brian Williams. And now there's a bigger question, did he fly at all? So it wasn't just that he followed a helicopter and being in another one. Now the question comes, was he? Don't shut him off. I want to see what he says. And he may not have done any of that. So he's compounded the lie with a different lie. And that's, so let's hear what Lawrence is saying.
So anyway, Lawrence, we absolutely agree that Brian Williams overstepped what he should have done. You're the person who brought up the issue. We have no argument with that. We don't believe that people on the air should be lying about what's going to happen.
I think the constructive thing we need to ask Lawrence, what the constructive thing to do, other than firing, what would you recommend for the industry, which is, I think, the problem.
And you have Geraldo Rivera, who's well exaggerated things, and a respected commentator on Fox Network.
Hardly.
And Dan Rather, and Brian Williams. As far as the constructive rehabilitation, Lawrence, you're on the air again.
I'd like to ask you about Brian Williams and Katrina. Do you want to gloss over that one too?
You're going to have to remind me.
Please don't say gloss. You're the one who brought Brian Williams up.
Lawrence Williams made up the dead body.
Lawrence, you brought Brian Williams up. We agreed with you on the issue.
Well,
there's no need to argue with us. So.
I know about it in ways that most people don't.
Okay.
Go ahead. You're talking about Katrina and the exaggerated number of bodies?
Lied!
Well, Lawrence,
I
will tell you about that a second. I know someone, I coached a little basketball, which may not seem to be related here, of a Marine who was on one of the boats that collected those bodies. And his father worked for the city of Sarasota at the time. And I asked the father, what's he doing? This is during Katrina and the aftermath. And he was scooping up thousands of bodies that were flooding out of into the Gulf, into their boat that they were taking in. Not hundreds, thousands on a daily basis. The reported deaths were misreported, underreported. Now, whatever Williams said in that regard about numbers of death, dead Americans, and the handling of Katrina, please understand there's unreported lots of stuff that goes on, classified to conceal it, and the government does that all the time, including the Obama administration. So when you want to talk about stuff that is an abomination, I think you've got to look at it from the standpoint of how to make it better, how to change it. So we'll talk again, Lawrence. It's been a good point.
You're not going to allow me to continue?
Well, you call back in a while.
You're not aware of
the
story of Brian Williams lying at Katrina, are you?
Oh, I don't think the numbers were...
You're live on the air. Your name is?
This is Stephen St. Pete.
Your name is?
Hey, Stephen St. Pete.
Good morning, Steve!
You got your cross talking.
Oh, my goodness, there's Lawrence. He's on here.
Steve Love!
We're going to take you off, Lawrence.
Oh, you are?
Call back.
Goodbye, Lawrence.
Morning, Steve. What's up?
I just wanted to say, in a strange sort of way, Lawrence is actually making a rather interesting point, and that is how, you know, much the media lies, at least I will say in my lifetime, you know.
It's terrible.
I have heard more untruth coming out of the media, or as they like to say on the right, the mainstream media. You know, I love that term. You know, they talk about the mainstream media. They're on like every AM station up and down the dial, but they're not mainstream media.
Well,
you know?
Steve, I couldn't agree more. I mean, as I mentioned, the reason for putting Rather in his position, Diane Soria in hers, and some others, is because they wanted to cheapen the reporting, and they've certainly achieved that. And that's what you're, I think that's really ultimately what Lawrence should have been saying instead of making it a party versus party issue. It's really the media confusing what the people need to know versus what they want to let them know.
Yeah. The whole thing about, interesting topic about the media, is what happened in the rush to war with Iraq. The media just jumped on the bandwagon with the administration and assumed that there were indeed Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which there really was no presence of that there was indeed an effort. Do you remember the idea of plastic and duct tape, where the Bush administration says that Saddam Hussein had the ability to attack us? And this is amazing. People have forgotten that. They had the ability to attack us, and we should, they're going to have some kind of balloons over the United States, and we should go and buy plastic and duct tape and seal up our windows, because Saddam Hussein had this ability to use these chemical weapons, which we supplied, by the way. Donald Rumsfeld supplied the chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein.
Exactly.
And they're going to attack us. And again, the proof would be in the evidence of a mushroom cloud that Bush
said. I
heard
you comment under your breath there, Steve. What were your thoughts?
I was just, you know, I had completely forgotten about that, but when he said, I'm like, oh, yeah.
And the media just jumped on the bandwagon.
The lies come so quickly and so that you just forget them because it's like eclipsed by the next one.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Did you hear the Harley Slanger show, which we did last week, repeated, and then we're going to have him back in another week or so, hopefully. And he talked about the 28 missing pages as Governor Graham is pushing hard on the Congress to do, and that is the bombshell of bombshells, according to people who know. It all corroborates the connection between, I hate to say it, and this may be the ultimate harm for Jeb, the Bush family and the Saudis, and what they've collaborated to do is undermine this country and betray it.
Well, but it's happened again for thousands of years. Rewriting history has happened throughout ages. It happened during the Spanish-American War, where you had the Hertz magazine competing for newspaper sales. But our media before the Iraqi war was doing the same exact thing. They were trying to, this is what's happening here, and they were trying to increase listenership and viewership.
I remember back during the first Gulf War how suddenly everybody was it sounded like they had turned almost like liberal or something, because they're talking about how the Kuwaitis are being mistreated, and we've got to help the poor
and
Kuwaitis.
And Wolf Blitzer there on the news, and it became a big media event.
Babies, they were throwing babies in incubators on the floor and stuff like that, right?
Right, and then back in the 80s, it was the constant drumbeat about Central America. I mean, it's gone on all of my life, Augie.
Ever since
Watergate.
And before your life, again, it's gone on the media, whatever method it's been.
Yeah, he touched on something though. Let's see, when Watergate, what year was that? It was in
74.
Pardon, 74.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think.
Yeah. During that time, I got Watergate really stimulated me. I was going to vote for Humphrey at that time, until the Daily Machine showed its real colors, the way they are, and they really haven't changed, if you know anything about Illinois. And I at that time, I don't like one-party systems, and I like them even less now, so I changed parties, became a Democrat in the one-party system down here in Florida back some years ago. And the Daily Machine destroyed the ultimate Kennedy legacy when, of course, Bobby got killed, the mass assassination of key leaders in the Democratic Party. I wonder what Democrats did that to themselves. It's a curiosity that I've always wondered about. But so then you had the Cambodian incursions and all of that, and the media was just, no, he's not doing that. He's not pulling us into an extension of the Vietnam War. Move it into Cambodia, bomb the hell out of those people, and to go after Paul Pock. But, it's an interesting thing with the media selling out. And was it fair and equal that you had, Steve? Right now we could have been talking and arguing with with a lumbago rush. And what do you do in that situation, Steve?
There's really not a lot you can do except just, you know, look around on the radio for what little alternative. But there, I mean, you know, there's Democracy Now, and, you know, there's a couple of, there's your show and a couple of other things. And other than that, you know, just do like I do and just shut the radio off and play your CD player, man. You know?
Yeah, I spend hours daily hunting for nuggets that unbury the smell that's underneath them, and or the hint of smell, and it's and I don't go on the internet. I don't Google my information. I do it by physical handiwork, and it doesn't make me better than anyone else. It's just a different approach than is done today, since I'm a bit of a curmudgeon on the internet and everything else. But but I yap on, and we all talk to one another, those of us who care a little bit about information. But one of the real things I'm going to talk about later in the show is we don't want people to know anything. So we de-educate them. We defund education. We defund anything that helps people stand on their own two feet and stand up to the system.
Well, an ignorant people is a people that will believe almost anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it is. People, they really aren't really educated or anything. So, you know, if Rush or Mike Savage or somebody says some goofy thing on the air, they're like, oh, that makes sense to me. You know, Mike wouldn't lie.
Well, they play to attitude, don't they? I mean, isn't that it? The attitude of racism. Well, the guy's colored. How can he be president, for crying out loud? How can you have a colored man in charge of our... He couldn't possibly be confident of that.
I always like the way they use his middle name, which is a code that he might be a Muslim, because he's Barack Hussein Obama.
Exactly. Exactly on, man. Exactly on. You're so right about that. And it is coded. And then when you say, what's the difference between Ferguson and Selma? Time. Nothing else. And that I saw the film Selma the other day, and it's well done. It showed the one march that Martin chose to turn back on when he thought there was a trap, but he wondered why he didn't go and accept the trap that was going to be a slaughter of people. But it was always the police that managed and controlled the criminality of the South. It was always the sheriffs that made that happen. The mafia of the South was always the sheriffs. And then the other political way to keep people under control was to pit the whites and the blacks, the plantation mentality. The blacks are taking over. You're going to lose your job if you let the liberals take over the South. Ain't that a problem? And then you're going to have, what are you going to have? Well, we're going to protect you because we have the sheriffs. We don't have the mafia. They were the mafia, and they still are.
During that time, there was a movie called Macon County Line. Do you recall that?
No.
I do, sort of.
Yeah, Macon County is a part in deep Georgia, and it referred to some people. I think there were kids traveling from the north, and they got involved with the cops of Georgia. And it was a terrifying movie to me at that time because in college, you want to travel and see the world. But I tell you, there's parts of the world I'm afraid to go to, namely places like Iraq or Syria right now. I'd be afraid to travel there. And in my college youth, I was afraid to go to Georgia. And part of it was true because there was a lot of power that the police had. We even had it in a place called Waldo, Florida, where you just travel 1 mile an hour over the speed limit. It was a speed trap that we had here in Florida.
We had one right here on Longboat Key.
Yeah. Well, that's true, too. Yeah. But
I was picked up one night for speeding. The cop followed me from Bradenton Beach with his lights off. I saw him. Mm-hmm. I followed the speed limit to the numbers, and he waited till I hit this one zone that allowed 45 for, like, 100 yards. I put it at 45 and went back. He waited till I went past that point, followed me over the bridge over to Aledo, pulled me over, and I said, I watched you the whole time with your lights off. And you were doing, at midnight, this was. And this clown went ahead, and he got angry as hell, waited for me to react so he could pound me. He was just, his sweaty hand was on his club all the time. I took the ticket, I bought the bill. But that's what goes on for passes for government.
It does sometimes. By the way, we're not anti-police officers, but there are whether
I do not make apologies for criminals who don't qualify to be police.
Yeah.
If you're not going to regulate and call these people to account, then you're going to have what we have. And it's going to happen, if it's going to happen, unquote, to the Christians, to the least of these, it's going to happen to you, Joker.
No, I absolutely agree with you. But the same token, I've been pulled over by some police who have been really nice. I had a situation happen out with my kids. Went to Cody Roadhouse and had a couple beers. And it just changed from dusk to dark as I'm coming up Cortez, which was well lit up. And I made a turn onto a side street. My lights weren't on. A police officer pulled me over, which he should have. My lights weren't on. He asked me, do you mind if I have you been drinking? I said, yeah, I had two beers. He said, do you mind if I give you a breathalyzer test? I said, well, that'd be fun. And he reacted nicely to it. He gave me the breathalyzer test. Caller, I'll be with you in a second.
Yeah, Steve, we got a few more.
All right,
I want Steve to finish the comment here. So.
And he pulled me over, gave me the breathalyzer test. I didn't even register at all. He was so nice and so respectful.
Oh,
he
you
did
can
what
find
he,
him, sure.
He did what he was. No, I think
story,
most of them
the
are that way.
The stories are, Steve, do you?
I think most of them are
why
that
don't you
way.
Make your final thoughts?
Let me see if I get
the
caller right here. We'll be back.
Go ahead, Steve.
It would be nice if policemen were, but unfortunately, most policemen that I've run into, they basically think they're bullies. They think that they're above you, and you know it's kind of the I don't know the master servant mentality, and you know so.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I'll just corroborate you a little bit, and then one more answer. The Sarasota police are hired as for the fact that they're bullies. They're not hired for any other reason. Even though the qualification sheet suggests one thing, people on the inside have told me who've seen it happen. They're given a sheet, sign it, we'll fill up the rest, fit yourself with the uniform. If you're big and strong, that's what we want, and stupid.
Sounds like it works.
Yeah, it really does, Steve. Hey, call back,
right.
Please. I love what you
later,
say.
Later, bro.
Okay.
Your first name?
So we got another caller on the line, and the subject obviously has stirs the blood a bit. We want to honor our police. We want to respect them. However, it's tough to do when people are mistreated. And when you see a car stopped, when I see a car stopped by the police, I always check to see if it's a black person or a colored person or Hispanic. But anyway, so
we do have a black person on the air right
good.
Now.
Okay, who do we have
and,
here?
I'm going to try to put Neil on. I think we lost Steve. I've got Neil on. Neil,
yes,
you're live.
Yes, I'm on. Listen, I just want to talk about the law that I see in the United States. By the way, I'm an African American, and you know, I was watching a movie just a couple of days ago about how that this kid got gunned down in New York at the Fruitvale station. He got shot in the back. Those cops walked. They were acquitted. Why is it that we say we have a law in the United States when the law themselves break the law? That's not a law. That's an unjust situation. Those officers, every one of them that was a part of that, should have been in prison right now for life. Look at how this Trayvon Martin case. This man was acquitted. He was behind this kid, and they told him to wait until the police get there. But yet he guns down Trayvon Martin.
Well, Neil, just for one second, keep in mind that was not a police officer who killed Trayvon Martin.
I know he
was
not a police officer, but I just want to bring out the point about the law in the United States of America. I'm trying to understand the law because I have children, I have grandchildren, and I really want to know what kind of law do we have in the United States of America, because I don't see it as a law. I see it as a bunch of vigilantes saying that they have a badge on and they have a right to gun you down.
Our culture is such, Neil. Unfortunately, we afflict the afflicted and we comfort the comfortable. And that has actually become the truth. But now the middle class is being squeezed. The middle of America is being squeezed. These students in the schools are not being educated. And the less education you have, the harder it is to defend yourself. And we have another factor. We have states' rights. instead of human rights. And we allow officials within those states' rights to act differently. But in New York, they don't have states' rights, and they could fire. And there, but there is no independent judgment on officials who represent what is police enforcement and keeping the peace, being peacemakers. They are making something other than peace, and it's spread through the country. And I think we need a national set of standards for police at all levels, whether it's the sheriff, the city police, metropolitan police. They all should fall under the same standards and scrutiny. And any policeman called in for what you've experienced, what you've witnessed, what I have experienced, what I've witnessed, what Floyd has experienced and what he's witnessed, they should have an independent inquiry. What happened in Ferguson, what happened with the fellow who was choked to death on film in New York City.
For selling a few loose cigarettes.
Yeah.
And he got shot in the back.
That's another one.
But what about this other kid that had his hands up? I forget the part of the state it was in. And then this young officer shoots this kid down, and his hands are up in the surrender.
Neil.
And then he gets shot down. But this cop, they come back with, "Oh, you are acquitted." Well, okay, if an African American would have shot someone down like that, the first thing that they would want to do is take us to a hanging tree.
Well, you know,
I really want to share this. We pretend like the prejudice and the keeping a certain nation of people from progressing, we pretend that it don't happen. But it's happening. It's very much alive. When I was coming up in school, and school was integrated, I mean, we basically had to fight just to stay in school.
The thing that I recognize in what you're saying is a couple things, and what Floyd mentioned too. But there was the young boy in Cleveland that was shot within seconds of the police pulling up their car in the middle of the park. The boy was just messing around with a toy.
A toy gun, though, you have to say.
Well, it was a toy gun.
And the toy gun looked realistic. It didn't have the typical markings of what a toy gun was. Again, I'm not defending
that's all true. You can get into that's exactly how the indictment went down. We excuse marginally excusable behavior when the police do it. Or maybe extreme behavior, but if someone else, a black person, does the same thing, like the woman who shot to try to frighten her husband away from beating the children up and killing her.
And beating her.
She was in jail for three years. She went to prison, and she used the Stand Your Ground law.
Fired a warning shot, and that was a horrible thing that happened with her.
But the excuse of the grand jury at that time on that particular case was, she ran back into the house where she remembered where the gun was, went into the garage to get it, and then went in and fired a warning shot. However she did that, they found that as an excuse to keep her in the system and keep her in prison. Years ago, I have to say, Neil, I worked with a young black kid for 9 years up in Illinois, and I had to get
him. I like the term African American better than black because, see, I feel very strongly about that because when we say black, it just takes the value off of the human being. It really don't place no value on it. It's just a color.
I will say partially white, partially black, a young male. But he was hounded by a sheriff's deputy who was determined to get him arrested continually. He had a mother who worked nights. His sisters worked jobs nobody was at home. And he'd come out of school and he'd walk down the street and the sheriff's deputy would pull over, yank him up, usually on a Thursday night, put him in jail overnight. And then they would call me. I would end up calling the attorney, state attorney, the city attorney. I'd say, your hearing is required within 24 hours. What's happening here? And then lo and behold, on Friday night, he was out again. I did that about three or four times. But it was a situation where easy marks are helpless people, and the police regard their job as doing it easily rather than more seriously, and they arrest on that basis way too often. Old people get arrested because they can be pushed around and intimidated if they don't have money. Poor whites the same way, and there is a class racist component here. But I said long, long ago, Neil, that the plantation lives and is alive and well through our police department. In the days of the plantation, there was a straw boss. Everybody did his bidding. It's now called the corporation, and that's what we got.
I'm going to interject here. I acknowledge there are some police who get way overcarried, and I can tell you some personal cases that happened to me where I've been really in a lot of trouble because of police who are overzealous. But take a look at New York. Shortly after the situation, the guy getting killed, strangled for having loose cigarettes, which was absurd what had happened to him, we had two police officers who were shot to death, too. I can understand the police officers being scared. If I'm in trouble, I'm going to call the cops. I mean, you're going to have... I'm a teacher. There are teachers that I've worked with who did not belong in the classroom. There are absolutely police officers who don't belong with a gun and on our streets. But no matter... When you have tens of thousands of people, you're going to have absolutely some people who are horrible. Neil, there are some people who are African Americans.
You're telling Neil, you'll have to.
There are people,
I'm going to interject.
There are
here.
People who are African Americans who are scary. There are people who are white who are scary.
If I had children and I were African American, I'd be terrified for my children to go out in public.
And I would as well. I agree with that.
You know, gentlemen, I want to make another interesting statement because what you're talking about is fear.
Yep.
We should not feel fear according to our law enforcement. We should feel comfort and be comfortable, rather than being afraid of a bunch of fruitcakes out there with guns that are completely out of control. A cop goes to the gun range, and they can easily pick a part of the body to say, for instance, if they saw someone with a gun, you know. But when you look at the difference, if a Caucasian male has a gun, they don't go shoot him down.
No, I disagree with that, Neil.
You know what they do? They make sure that they try to get him restrained. But if an African American is there, if he have a hair comb in his hand, he's gunned down like trash. Because this nation has got to the place that we have more criminals with badges than we do criminals on the street themselves.
Well, I'm going to agree with Neil in this way. Neil, the problem you have is not the bad cops. It's the good cops who do nothing. It's good men who say nothing and watch it happen. The thin blue line, or whatever you want to call it, where the one bad acting cop can intimidate an entire force. I witnessed a car wreck, and I've told this on the air before, in Illinois, and it so happened the police were running to a Peeping Tom situation. And they were driving up this hill at a rate of at least 100 miles an hour because the hill was very steep. And they lied and said they were going up 45 miles an hour. They plowed into a heavy car. This was a few years back. It was a Toronado front-wheel drive when there weren't that many front-wheel drive cars. Toronados being a very heavy vehicle. And they drove that vehicle across the intersection, went backwards and flopped up onto a lawn. And
the morning,
police who was driving that car, it was his girlfriend. She was dead. And he's pounding the top of his car. I said, I'll be a witness for you. He says, oh, that's all right. That's all right. Well, I tried to be a witness. Couldn't happen. I knew people in the police force who told me then afterwards, head of the police community relations, we can't get rid of these guys. That's the problem. We can't get rid of these guys was the mark that he laid down. And I witnessed that, and it was winter, and I ran out with practically no clothes on, enough just to cover me, and this is the situation. Neil, one more comment shortly, and then we'll come and have you call back about this again, please.
Well, I would just like to, honestly, as you were talking about the fear factor, I think we should... I hope our police will eliminate the fear factor and give the people that are people that are decent give us a chance to live without living under fear of our own law enforcement.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you so much. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, I enjoyed that call, and I agree with a lot of what Neil had. I've actually had my life saved by a police officer, and I if I'm in fear, I'm going to call a police officer. But I've also had my life put in jeopardy by a police officer as well. And
you see what the problem is, and I totally agree. I had several police officers who were friends of mine in Illinois, and I have some who were here, and they're good people. But the damnable part is what I just talked about, is the fear they have within their own department of their fellow police officers.
And that absolutely is a situation, because they're going to stand up for their own.
I'll tell you a circumstance. This is not about that kind of thing, but where the politics of this play into effect. There was a very good sheriff's head after a very bad sheriff in Sarasota County. Monge was his name. A good man. He'd take calls directly for. He was actively involved. The current sheriff is absolutely absent, as far as I can see. He has a good department, but he's not really involved, and I don't think he gives a damn. But Monge went to the convention of sheriffs in I think Miami. This is some years ago, and he was proposing that the sheriff be appointed by the county commission, so any problems would fall to their decision making, not to him, as if he were political. When you vote for a sheriff, you're voting for a politician, and you're not voting for policing necessarily. In the case of Monge, you did, and he wanted to change that. Guess who fought with him, argued with him, openly opposed him? The other sheriffs in the state of Florida, 67 counties. So you have a situation where the change that needs to come from within is in their hands, and it should be in the hands of various county commissions, and the change should come from there. And that would make politicians more responsible for what kind of policing they had. What on this county commission of Manatee or Sarasota is going to say anything in the face of that power that the sheriff has?
Well, I think I disagree with you. I'd rather vote for our local sheriff.
You want to keep him a politician? Are you kidding?
Well, wow. I would rather vote than have him appointed by politicians. And that's a thought. I've watched it happen.
So when the kid of the wealthy donor gets pulled over by the police or the sheriff, whatever, and he says, I'll call my dad, and he'll get me out, and his dad is his biggest donor, and he gets this guy into his job, that's what you want.
Well, that's going to happen just as well if the county commissioner is
appointed
as well.
Takes five people in Sarasota, takes seven here.
Yeah. Again, my personal preference, I'd rather elect the guy, but I don't like the way it happens as far as donors, whether it's national politics or local politics. Well, we've had a good day today. I'd like to thank Lawrence and Steve and Neil for
really
their calls.
I really do want to thank Lawrence, because the Brian Williams issue goes to people at the top, mm-hmm. and he's absolutely right about that.
Yeah, and we agree with the idea of both Brian Williams, also Geraldo Rivera,
Steve,
and also Dan Rather.
Yeah,
we've seen
Steve
reporters go over.
And he agrees with Lawrence. You know we're doing something right.
Mm-hmm. And I want to thank Neil. I agree with
you. You're listening
points.
To 1490 AM. WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
Fear of being sued. Share your stories. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.